Today on the AF Podcast, I'm joined by South Shirai family member Julian, a.k.a. Jules the Commish, as we break down part two of our NBA awards. We share our nominees and selections for the Sixth Man and Rookie of the Year awards. We get into some more bubble talk. We also discuss the home team, the Toronto Raptors, and how they're looking inside of the bubble and more. This podcast was recorded before the Raptors went out and beat Orlando to remain undefeated in the bubble. So they're 3-0 as we speak. Indy and Phoenix remain the only other teams with the same record. Thanks in advance for tuning in. South Sharaf is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts are just some of the places that you can listen to all of the South Sharaf shows. Continue to rate, review, and subscribe to all of the shows. Hit the like button and the five stars. It helps to grow the brand out, which I appreciate. And I thank you because, you know, I have manners. So as of this week, you can check me out on TuneIn and Alexa. So if you have that app on your device or your smart TV, you can hit the favorite button there as well. Just get out of the way right now. Just hit the favorite button right now. Then you can go listen to your favorite radio station that they made up on TuneIn afterwards to further brighten your day. South Shirav is on TuneIn and Alexa, so check us out. And don't forget to subscribe to SouthShirav.com to dive deep into my past catalog. Once again, that's SouthShirav.com. It's the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shirav Radio. Alexa, please play South Shirav so you can listen to all of the latest episodes. Like right now.
Welcome to the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shirav Radio.
Welcome to the AV Podcast. My guest today is a South Shirav family member. He is the commissioner now of 23 fantasy leagues across the GTA because with all the leagues shutting down and everything else happening during this COVID period, there's a reduction in these fantasy leagues now. So most notably, it might be football next. So he doesn't have as much leagues to commish, but he's still the commish. Ladies and gentlemen, Julian, a.k.a. Juice of the Bish, welcome to the show once again. How you doing?
Yes, thank you for having me. And just to let everybody know, I am contracting my services out to commission your league during these times.
Somebody's got to do it.
You got it.
Somebody's definitely got to do it. And it's a weird, man, this is such a weird time, man, because, again, we may not even have, you've seen what's happening with baseball. And the baseball thing is like, is borderline ridiculous in itself. I mean, I think the Marlins just started back playing yesterday, and I don't even know if they're going to be able to finish their 60 games, which is weird. And then, like I said, you have the NFL, which, you know, you saw the video today where they're spraying these guys with Lysol before they come onto the field, like
with that's uniforms
gonna do anything.
On.
Yeah, with uniform and helmets on, like that's going to do anything. It's like they're washing them off like fruit, like when you get it from the grocery store. Like,
go ahead. It's crazy times. No, it's crazy times. Like, if you are a commissioner, you have to, like, of fantasy sports, you have to have, like, a plan B, plan C, and maybe even a plan D before the season starts, because you don't know, especially if you're commissioning a dynasty league like ours, right? So. Mm-hmm.
Well, look at the NBA one that we're in, right? Like, we stopped to figure out what we're going to do with that for next year because we couldn't even continue this one because with the 8-game restart, I mean, you got play, like, I know I got guys on my team that are not going to be in that bubble, you know? Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, we can't actually restart it because I got like Levine and certain guys in there that I'm like, there's no way. And Levine was one of my better players. There's no way, like, I'm going to win if he's sitting at home. So
yeah, the NBA, you can't have fantasy basketball with the bubble going on with just 8 games.
Yeah, like
that can't work.
Like daily fantasy, you can do, but that's about it.
Yeah, that's about it. But yeah, MLB, you can do. Like I'm in a MLB league right now, but it's a potential of it being shut down, right? And if you have drafted players and it's a keeper and a dynasty or whatever, then what do you do? Right? If you make trades, yeah, it's just wild. But anyhow,
it is
what it is, right?
No,
at this point, it's going to be like this going on next year too. Like, it doesn't matter. But like, I think the NBA is going to be in a bubble again next year.
Yeah,
I think baseball, the virus is not going anywhere anytime soon, and there's no vaccine coming anytime soon that I think or know of. So
yeah, in your opinion, but
yeah,
but the thing is too, like before we even start, like, and I know I spoke about this in the last podcast. I'm surprised the NFL didn't do some sort of plan, some sort of bubble situation. Like I know I got into great detail about that the last one, but like. I'm still kind of shocked, like when you've seen some of the footage of like the Denver Broncos getting sprayed down with hand sanitizer and before they hop on the field, like you can see they're just flying by the seat of their pants. They have no idea what they're looking to do. You know,
like listen, the owners, the NFL owners, are a different breed than any other owners.
Absolutely,
in any sport, like they just to me. You know, that's going to be a whole other topic, but you know, I think right now they're just looking at making a buck, you know, making some money. Mm-hmm. And deadly disease or not, nothing's going to stand in the way for these guys. Like, so bubble talk or traveling from city to city to play, I think that's all they really care about. And the players, you know, I find them to be out of all the other major sports, you know, that NFL PA or their unions, the worst union there is. In terms of supporting their players, so I think they just look at the money too, and they just that's priority for them too, like for most players.
Right.
So you know, otherwise you would think there would be some type of revolt by the players. I'm not going to be playing in this situation. Actually, I did see Odell Beckham say something today. He actually said something like, "He goes, this is ridiculous. What the hell are we doing? There's no plan." Blah blah blah. So like, mm-hmm. I thought I'd be seeing more of that. Training camp is coming around the corner.
I know. He's the only one that's like, and I mean, it sounds funny that, you know, because not to say he's a big knucklehead, but it's like, it sounds funny that he's like the voice of reason, where he's like, why are we even like, we shouldn't even be playing this season. And you know, they're talking about, well, you know, like since he's been back on the facilities, he's a little more at ease. But again, it's not about the facilities. It's about when you have to travel to go to these games.
And, got it.
You know, there's no protection. Like, are they just confined to the hotel they're staying in? Like, how is this whole process working? You know, like there's no answer for that.
There isn't, and it looks like it's just normal. It's got from what it sounds, or from what I've read, it's going to be normal as a regular season. Like, yeah. I'm sure they're going to do precautions, but like in terms of travel and whatnot, and the schedule, nothing's really going to change. So. Anyhow, we'll see how it goes. In terms of like speaking out, like a lot of the players too, like Odell too, like he made some money, so a lot of like he may be all right to sit out a season, but like there's a lot of like rookies, like you know, they're looking for that money, and then B, they're just younger, maybe not having to care as much as the older guys or families, so they don't care as much either, right? So
right,
no, you're gonna get different opinions on to start or not to start or.
For sure. Like I know some, I won't mention the guys, but I know some players who have been through that the scouting combine situation. And to lend to what you're saying earlier, they're like, yo, when you go to the scouting combine and you're standing in a room with just your underwear on, he's like, you're literally treated like cattle or like a slave. Like those are the two things I've heard. So it's like seeing this process, that video with the Broncos today, it kind of like reinforced that in my mind where it's like, these guys are just—they're just product. Like they're just—they're just product, man. That's how they're treated.
And what's crazy to me that is, were they getting sprayed going onto the field?
It looks like it, yeah.
You would think they'd be getting sprayed before they enter in a closed building room, like not going outside. Like at this point, it's too late, you know, because if they're changing in the locker room, and if somebody does have COVID or asymptomatic symptoms or whatnot, it's already spread. Like. I don't see how you spray somebody on the way out the facility, but hey, man, whatever.
And you're gonna sweat that out like within 10 seconds of being in the heat, but.
But I guess that they are in close physical contact, right? The linemen and whatnot. But I don't know. I just find it. I don't know.
I thought it was hilarious. But speaking of the owners trying to make a buck, man, I don't know if you saw that report last week with the. The article that was talking about the amount of money that some of these owners are losing during this period. But I think the one that was eye-opening was, and it's not because of the NBA really, but the owner of the Miami Heat, Mickey Arison, because he is like the CEO of the Carnival Cruise Ships, right? Like, wow. In Florida. So they said since this pandemic started, like officially started in March, he has lost $2.6 billion since March. $2.6 billion, Julian. And he's not like Bezos where he's making like he's worth like $180 billion. So this is nothing to him. Like that is like taking a significant chunk out of his wealth. So because last I heard, I don't even know where I read this. I wish I should have wrote this down. But I think there was a rumor that where he was like, "Yo, we're opening that arena up next year. We don't care what the hell happens. Every fan is coming into that arena." and I'm like, people could read that and be like, "Yo, this guy's a scumbag." I'm kind of like. When you lose $2.6 million, I kind of get it. And especially when you're running an industry where you don't even know when that's opening up again, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, those are his investments that are outside of, like, that Carnival is probably the cruise lines now. Right. It's probably the worst investment you can have right now. But so that's not how much he's losing from the heat, like,
No.
That's his personal. I'm sure athletes are losing money, but I know what you're saying. Like, you're pretty much talking about the amount in dollars he's lost, right? In terms
I know he was like the biggest hit, but like, yeah, somebody's, you know, especially these owners that own the arenas, and there's nothing. You have this stadium of 20,000 people, or arena of like 20,000 people with no events going in here. Because even when the season's over, you got concerts, you got festivals, you got, you know, like circuses, like kids concerts. Mm-hmm. You got all this. Like, you own an arena that is functioning all year round, essentially, right? Like, but it's like nothing is filled in there right now. So there's like 4 or 5 months of just nothing being in there.
But you, but Calvin, you're never gonna catch me crying over for these guys. I don't care. You know, it's a lot of money. 2.6 billion, is that what you said? But like, mm-hmm. What's this wealth? Like, what's that percentage?
You know, I'm gonna Google it right now to see what it's worth.
Right, because I'm not crying for any of these owners for losing money. These guys are, you know, they're owners. You know how much money they have, or their wealth. Yeah, I'm sure he lost money from his investments and whatnot, but I can give two shits.
Well, according to a quick Google search, he's worth $5.5 billion.
Okay, so he lost half of his wealth. It is a lot. Don't get me wrong. But there's still potential of that gaining back. You know, it's like having stocks. It's a loss on paper until he sells it, or that's when the official loss begins. Like, I'm not crying for him or his lineage or his family. I'm not worried about him at all.
Well, with that said, in terms of that topic, let's focus on. Actually, let's, you know what, I'll ask you what your thoughts on the NBA bubble so far, in terms of like any performances, and your thoughts on just how this restart so far, because we'll get into some of the couple of awards, I guess a little bit after, but in terms of the restart, what's your thoughts on this so far?
You know what, the very, very first game I watched, it was not awkward, but I didn't feel comfortable. Like, it didn't feel like what I was used to, right? So it takes a while. Well, for me personally, it took me a while to get used to the scenery, the background, the vibe, the energy of the game, like through the TV. Like, I could see it. It just looked, it was good, but like, the games were good.
You're talking about the scrimmages, or like
the scrimmages? Games? Even the first like 2-3 games that I watched, right? Mm-hmm. The scrimmages, the preseason, and whatnot. But now, to this point now, from that, like, last week, or I don't know, it's been, might have been 2 weeks now. Yeah. So now, like, the intensity has picked up, and I've gotten more used to the setting. It was just, I guess it was more so for me to get used to this new NBA. So, but right now, I love it, man. The games are intense. The players are intense. The players are taking it seriously. You know, they're still playing for contracts as well. Mm-hmm. And playoffs and whatnot. So yeah, for me as a fan, I absolutely love it right now. You know, it's still not going to be the same as watching your team go on the road and beat the Lakers in LA, or winning at home. So it's never going to be the same. But to my expectations, it has actually exceeded my expectations.
It's a little jarring to see, like, especially when they have the virtual fans, Like, it's weird to watch that part, the virtual fans on the screen.
Yeah.
And you're seeing, like, the other day you saw Chris Bosh watching one of the games on his couch at home, and he's on the screen with a goofy smile, and you're seeing Paul Pierce and different people. Like, it's
But you know what? But weird. When you're watching the game, you're not really seeing it, though. When you don't see the actual face. Like, you got to really zoom up and take a look at it, like, afterwards. Somebody has to pause it and zoom. And, like, and right now, it's just, like, background. So it doesn't really affect me.
In terms of, you know, the times that we're living in right now, I'm enjoying it. Like, yeah, it's never going to match, like, an actual real game, of course, without fans being there. Like, I think that, especially when it comes to playoffs, it changes the whole atmosphere of what you're watching.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
With that said, though, like, yeah, this has been actually been good in terms of some of the games I've seen. There's been some great performances we've seen so far since the season started July 30th. There's been some great performances. There's been some really good games like that. That Memphis Portland game on Friday. Oh man, that game was a great game. They were coming at each other they were like, both of them were playing. And it was, and again, it's a super important game because with the rules and this play-in thing where you have to, if you're within four games of the eighth seed, you get to have a two-game playoff. So I think how it works is if you're the ninth seed, you get that play-in game, you have to beat the eighth seed twice. And the eighth seed will also beat you once. Right? So gotcha. It's a potential best of three. So you're trying to make up that ground now because you only have those eight games. So so part of the reason why these games have been so good is you sit back and really think about it. Outside of like the Eastern Conference, because most of the teams in this thing is from the West. Outside of there's 22 teams, 13 of them are in the West. But the quality of games, there's just good teams. Like most of the teams in there are good teams.
Well, because we weeded out like the Knicks and
like the Hornets,
and the Bulls, they're out. Man.
The Hawks and all those crappy teams, shitty teams. We rolled them out. We excommunicated them out of the bubble. So, like you're getting like the games you're getting, and plus because there's stakes on the line, you're getting some quality games. Like look, you saw the other day, T.J. Warren had 53. He's been on a tear, actually. I can't even mention that one game. He's been on a tear pretty much.
He's having a great season pre-COVID to even now. Mm-hmm. A great season. Mm-hmm. He just needed a new scenery, I guess.
A new scenery. But the thing is, he's always been a scorer. So I'm not surprised by that. But like his restart, like he's been their most valuable player on the Pacers so far.
Yeah.
Because even today, he had another 30 plus point game again.
He may have turned that page like to that new level where he puts that pressure on himself to keep getting 20 points per game and keep. So he might be actually found something in Indiana now where he's been looking for in Phoenix. He's also injury prone like crazy, right? Like he always has concussions and headaches, and stuff like that. But so if he can stay healthy and maintain this, Indiana might be a problem too, right?
Yeah, I think they would because especially Oladipo's back and stuff. Like their backcourt is going to be tough to deal with, of course. But like if Warren's going to continue to play like this, it's gonna be a problem. Like now, imagine Sabonis. Yeah, it's a Sabonis. I can't remember his first name now, but Sabonis. He's been out of the bubble because he's dealing with that foot injury. So I don't know. Like there's no timetable for him to come in, but. If he's there and he's healthy, they're going to be really tough if he comes back. But I don't know. The chance of him coming back for this bubble situation, it's not looking good.
I haven't seen all the games yet. Like I've seen TJ Warren's like highlights and I see the box scores and I didn't even realize Sabonis wasn't playing.
Yeah, and then the other part too, like just to go back to my point about like some of the crappier teams being gone, like the teams that are. Like especially in the West that are beneath the eighth seed, because again you have a chance to be in this restart. A lot of these games, like even Memphis, I don't think Memphis has won a game in this restart. They're 0-3 so far.
Yeah.
But every game they've been in, it's gone down to the wire. Like, it's not for a lack of trying. Like these guys are pretty much all of those teams are playing like their life is on the line every game. So you're getting some really good performances.
Yeah,
you're really getting even today. Like we're talking now. We just I know I just finished watching Phoenix and the Clippers, and Phoenix won again. They're They're 3-0 in this bubble so far. And Booker went to work pretty much from tip.
Wow.
Even that last, even the buzzer beat that he hit, it was pretty much over Kawhi and Paul George.
I saw that shot. That was a tough shot.
That was a tough shot. But I mean, that wasn't like, but again, if you watched that whole game, like, you weren't really surprised. It was a great shot, but like, that, it kind of matched up with how he was playing the whole game.
Like, what was his final stat line?
He had 35. He ended up with 35.
Wow.
Yeah,
man, some great games, man. Like, even those teams that that don't normally show up, they're showing up, right? So maybe mentally it's a fresh start for all of those teams.
Yeah, I think so. Because again, right, you're getting 4.5 months of training and like even like that Portland situation. Cause we're offline, we're talking about how well Nurkic is looking. Like the guy's looking like he's all the way back. But you got to consider, like, somebody like him coming in, he was supposed to come in at the end of March or beginning of April, from what they were saying in terms of that compound fracture that he had. And now you gave him an extra 4 months to kind of be off his feet and heal while getting his body right, you know, ready for the season. So he didn't have, like, a situation where it's like, okay, I'm going to come in, I'm going to play 10 minutes. I'm going to play 15 minutes, like, to try to warm your body up to playing the rigors of the NBA again. He got an extra 4 months to prepare his body to get all the way back. So now when he's back, he's just back. Like, that game they played against Memphis, he was killing them.
Yo, he makes Whiteside look redundant now. Like, you know, I actually thought, like, the acquisition of Whiteside, it was a great fill-in for Nurkic.
Right,
and it was. But now Nurkic looks like, honestly, it's only been a couple of games, so, right? But I don't want to jump the gun, but Nurkic looks like an all-star, you know? Yeah, it's only 3 games, I think, right? But, he makes that team dangerous. And David CJ now. And you got Whiteside, right? And you got Whiteside, too. Like.
And Collins, because Collins is back, too, and he's
Collins is back, too. Yes. There's some bench depth, right?
Absolutely.
And that's where they struggled all season, man. No bench.
Yeah, right, and now they got one. Or at least they got a better one, especially where they're bigs. They got a better one. I know the last podcast, I kind of switched my dark horse for them to be Portland, because I switched it from the Pelicans to Portland the last podcast, because it's funny, because I know Barkley was the one that was saying that if they meet the Lakers in the first round, he's picking Portland to beat them.
Really?
I don't find it as far-fetched as, I'm not saying that the Lakers would lose, but it's not as crazy as it sounds, because really, with Portland being as healthy as they are right now, they're really like one of the top 4 or 5 best teams in the West, easily. Like, with them being healthy right now, like, because of where they are in the standings, I don't know if they're going to make it. And they have a shot right now because, again, like, they've already beaten Memphis. Memphis hasn't won a game in this restart. And they're probably one of the favorites to at least to get to that 9th seed to play in that playing game. Because right now, I think they're 2 games out of the 8th spot. So if they meet Memphis in that playing game, they're going to beat Memphis.
Yeah, I think so.
Especially
at this point.
Now with Jaren Jackson tearing his knee, they're definitely gonna beat Memphis. And like I said again, that is not a team the Lakers want to face. You want to face Lillard and McCollum in the first round with nobody to guard them. They're gonna run wild. Yeah. You saw what Lowry did to them.
and Lowry, God bless him, I love him, but he shouldn't be doing that to anybody right now and at his stage of his career.
And he's looking really good though too, but
he's, you know what? Yeah, he surprised me. Shoot, as much as Nurkic returning back looking so good, because you know Lowry always for me was like, he's always like chubby, losing. You know, he just, I don't know. I just thought this time off he would have blown up in terms of his size returning back to the bubble, but he actually looks like in decent shape, and he looks like the same pesky Tasmanian devil Lowry all over the floor. He looks really good.
You're saying he's got the Luther Vandross syndrome.
Yeah, he does, man. You don't know what you're gonna what size you're gonna get for his next record.
but
next album, you don't know what you're gonna get.
But you know what's funny though, he's like I said, when I saw the pictures of him at the one of the anti-black racism protests in Philly, when I saw him in the t-shirt, I was like, oh, wow, he's keeping in real good shape.
Yeah.
Because he was like he skinny Kyle at that point.
So
I was like, okay, he's you can see he's been doing work.
which is good. Too great to see. You know, when you get older, you have to, right? And it's good to see that he actually put in that work and actually, you know, cares about, you know, continuing his career and making money and winning games. And because, yeah, Gasol lost weight, mm-hmm. You know?
Gasol looks great, yeah. And also defending the title. Like, that's a real, you know, that's a real thought process. That's a real mindset shift.
I agree. Versus like being like the 14th seed or like a team that's losing, you know, it doesn't motivate you.
Yeah.
Like that. So that, I agree. Good point. Yeah.
Now, you know, I guess we could talk a little bit about Zion because, as you see, I think they finally won their game yesterday as of this recording where they beat Memphis. And Zion played the most minutes of his restart so far. I know that's everybody's been talking about why isn't he playing enough.
How many minutes did he get? What was the most?
I think yesterday he played 25 minutes.
Mm.
He played 25 minutes. He took the most shots that he's ever taken since his career started. He took 23 shots, I think.
Or 23 shots?
Sorry, 21 shots. He took 21 shots. And
still 21 shots is slick in like 25 minutes?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
So
I didn't see that. I didn't see that.
But what they did this time finally is they, I know he's still on that little bit of a minutes restriction. They made him play the last like 5-6 minutes of the game. They didn't just play the whole 25 minutes throughout the game and then just sat him out in the fourth. Like they actually saved him for the fourth quarter, and you could see where the, you know, the impact that he has on the game. Because yeah, he's just too big, man. Like he's just too big and explosive. Like I think the thing that's scary with Zion, like I don't know, I don't think they're gonna make make this play-in game or make the playoffs unless they're gonna play Zion like 30 minutes a game, because he's that impactful. Like I know Brandon Ingram is playing nice and he really is, and I love Jrue Holiday and stuff, but like he makes such a dramatic impact on games. And he punishes guys so much. Like the stuff he was doing to Valanciunas, and Valanciunas is a big boy, and he was moving Valanciunas around at times, like your cousin, like your little nephew, your cousin. Like that's how he was treating him sometimes. And like he just has such a huge impact on games. Like it's so felt. Like even if you never watch basketball, if you that was the first time you watch him play, you're like, yo, who the hell is that big thick big thick dude playing right now? You know, like he has such a huge impact that it to me, I'm like, I think the only way they make it is he's got to play like 30 minutes or more. He has to.
What? I just don't get why are they restricting his minutes still to this point? Like they've been off for 3 months, right? Or two
four months.
Like, why? And and if you are going to restrict him, you still got to let him play during the crucial minutes of the game, like
absolutely.
To end the game, because he needs that experience too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That intensity.
Absolutely.
So, like, I don't know. I don't know much about his medical, his current medical condition in terms of why they're restricting him, but you would think he should be, you know, at least 30 minutes plus. Jeez.
Yeah. The joke is, I think because he left the bubble due to the family situation, he didn't play in any of the scrimmage games. So I guess they wanted to kind of bring him along slowly.
Conditioning.
Yeah, conditioning. So I understand that point of it, but when the NBA did this bubble, they kind of did that in a sense because they wanted to get Zion involved to get the ratings up. Because I mean, they didn't have to put 22 teams. That's very specific.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that part of that was like we gotta get some of the Zion ratings,
which is smart.
No,
which
of course,
is absolutely,
of course,
smart.
You gotta make up all the money you can at this point. I totally get that, you know. But at the same time, it's like you can't also not play. You can't play in 15 minutes.
Yeah. I don't get that amount of restriction on him. But
and I mean, from when you're watching the games, like he doesn't have the brace on his knee or the leg sleeve that he had on during the season. Like he doesn't have that anymore. So I mean he's pretty like he's right there. So I think going forward I think they're gonna raise his minutes. They have to. Like I said again, if they want to compete for this bubble, there's no way he can still be playing just 20 minutes a game. Like he has to play like 30 minutes. That's their only shot to me. Because I mean you look at their schedule. It's not an easy schedule going forward. Like it started off being easy, but the fact that they gave up some of their games already. It's not going to be, because they're going to play the Kings twice. The Kings play really hard. I know they're not like, but they're in the same position as them, right? Where they're trying to, I think they're like half a game away from the Pelicans themselves. So they play them twice. They play San Antonio, who's also, I don't think they've lost yet since this thing started. And they're playing for their lives as well. You know,
so. Well, I was going to say, maybe some of these organizations are taking the approach where they don't want the eighth seed. Maybe. Like, I don't know. I don't know how the lottery or the draft is. I don't know how it's set up in terms of positioning in relation to standings and whatnot. But, you know, maybe Memphis, like, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if that's like part of their approach too. Is maybe, you know what, let's finish ninth and not, you know, get a better pick, or I have no clue, and make trades and with those picks. I don't know, because it doesn't make sense. And we don't know what these organizations are thinking. Sometimes when the coaches make decisions like this, the restrictions or the organizations, sometimes I look as a fan, I'm like, yo, I can be a better coach than this, right? Yeah. It just makes no sense. But hey, they may have a grander plan in place that we don't know about. And, maybe, who knows?
And that's the thing too, right? Like, you know, it's for them to play Zion 50 minutes, you know, that's not just a coach's decision alone. You know,
that's my point. Like, that's exactly. Yeah.
So that, like, you know, that's an organizational thing. Like, that's not.
Yeah.
That's not. If it was up to the coach, he's probably playing him, like, he's easily playing him at least 25 to 30 minutes right off the top.
Easily. Especially, again, after having been off for 4 months.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, I don't know.
He doesn't have any pain in his knees. Fine. They said he's 100%, like, in that way. Other than the conditioning, I would say, yeah. But other than that. Which is probably going to take a couple of games, because it's not like he missed like a month. He missed like a week and change. You know what I mean? So
yeah, like for, as you said with Nurkic and Zion, like COVID was the best thing, not the best thing to happen to them, but they had probably the most advantages or positives out of this, is that they got to rest those key guys. Mm-hmm. And Zion is their franchise player, and not having to have him back on the court for another 4 months is huge for them, I would think.
Yeah. Right. No, absolutely.
So, right. So, man, maybe they're thinking long term at this point.
Absolutely. So, okay. So, with that being said, before we get into the awards section of this, who's your dark horse bubble team? This is a question I've been asking everybody the last couple of weeks. Who's your dark horse bubble team?
To win it all?
To either win it all or to make it to the final.
I won't limit
you to one. Like, if you have two in your mind, you can choose that, but can't be more than two.
The dark horses to me, but maybe not to others. But I like Portland and Miami. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the two teams. Like, one in the East, one in the West. Those are my dark horse teams to maybe not win it, but go far. I like Miami, man. I like Miami as much as I do as Toronto in terms of coming out the East. I don't know. I just like them more so than Boston. Yeah. And then Portland, that's my dark horse. I don't see them coming out, though, right? But yeah. If I had to choose, I see them surprising a lot of teams going forward. Just based on what I saw for the first three games, right? I'm basing this off of what I'm seeing so far, obviously.
So to revisit this thing about them playing the Lakers in the first round, if they were the ones that got the eighth seed, do you think it's crazy that they can beat the Lakers?
Is it a seven game series? Are they all seven game, like regular?
Seven, yeah.
Okay, making sense.
Yeah.
Would it be crazy? Yes, it would be.
You think so, still?
Yes, okay. but would it be crazy to go six, seven games? No, it wouldn't be. I can't see them beating the Lakers. I can't see that happening, even with the lack of depth or bench the Lakers have. I can't see them beating LeBron and AD.
The thing that makes them tough is the fact that this, like I said, I mean, Lillard and McCollum are two guys that are hard to guard anyway. But when you lose, like, Avery Bradley was probably their best perimeter defender to guard those kind of guards. Danny Green's a great defender, but those specific kind of guards, you know what I mean? Like somebody like Avery Bradley, was very good. Even Rondo, even at this stage, is better equipped to guard those guys than like a Deion Waiters and a J.R. Smith coming off the bench. You know, so like that's to me is where the worrisome part is.
Those guys are guard dudes. Like, I hear you, but guards to me don't win you championships, man. Mm. You know, to me, like personally, from not including Jordan, like those type, or Isaiah's or Thomas's of the world, but like
or Stephen Clay.
Stephen Clay, yeah, Joel, yeah, 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 Stephen Clay. No, you're right, Stephen Clay. Actually, no, you got me there. But Steph is an elite player too. But like, yeah. And Dame is as well. But I don't see guys like Dame and CJ going through teams and winning like, or the Westbrooks going through teams and winning it all, especially not through LeBron, like two bigs like LeBron and AD. I wouldn't be afraid. Like, I think they're gonna, like, my point, I see them getting, like, I see Dame getting his 40 points and 10 assists or 9 assists, and CJ getting his 18 points and so on. So I not against LeBron. He can't go through LeBron. Any other team, yes, I would say, yeah, those two guards. And if matchups were a problem like the Lakers have with Portland, I could see them going through, but not with LeBron.
I think the Lakers, I think they match up pretty well with the Lakers. And again, I believe the Lakers would win that series too. But I think they actually match up pretty well with the Lakers. But like I said, the fact that the two guards are missing, and then you have so many bodies to throw at Nurkic. I mean, not Nurkic, at Davis. Between Whiteside, between Collins, between, let's say Whiteside, Nurkic. Like, you have those three guys like to throw at Davis.
Well, the Whiteside... AD kind of can play outside too.
Right.
Nurkic, those guys are not the greatest matchup. But you're right. You can throw bodies at him.
Yeah.
You can definitely throw guys.
I mean, you're not going to stop it.
Yeah.
You're not going
to
stop it.
And there's nobody to match up with LeBron, right? Say Carmelo. Right. There is zero. They have no small forward that I can think of right now.
Not to guard him, no.
Well, nobody can really guard him. But you know what I'm saying? Not even to throw at him. They don't match up well. They don't match up well for the Lakers either. So that's probably what would make it an interesting matchup.
Yeah, I think so.
Right? Both sides don't really match up well.
It would be entertaining just for the fact that we know if Portland was healthy this whole time, they would never be that great. They would never even be close to being that, you know? So with that said, let's move on to the award section of this podcast. So,
all right.
Okay, so you know, we'll start off with the sixth man category. So I got some nominees here for you.
Okay.
You know, you got guys like Christian Wood and Derrick Rose. Christian Wood was actually playing really well. I wish I picked him up on my fantasy team.
He has. Happy for him.
Yeah, oh, really? Nice story. Nice story for him.
Yeah.
But obviously their team was too shitty and they didn't even make the bubbles. So you kind of almost have to eliminate them from this. Seth Curry has resurrected himself. I'm really happy for him, kind of stepping out of his brother's shadow and forming a legitimate career of his own. He's been solid on Dallas this year. Goran Dragic has accepted his six-man role, his bench role. He's been playing well this season as well. I think he's in his contract year, so that doesn't hurt either.
No, it doesn't.
But my top three guys in this category is, first off, I'll start with Dennis Schroeder. Just to read out his stats real quick. He averaged 19 a game, 4 assists, 3 boards. The splits was 47% from the field, 38% from the three, 84% from the line. He was by far the MVP of the Thunder's bench. Like, their bench isn't that great, especially with all the injuries, like, coming off the bench, going into this bubble with Ferguson and Muscala. I think he had a concussion the last game. Like, me and you have always talked about, you know, the whole knucklehead thing. And he was definitely one of those players that, like, definitely wasn't the most mature guy, because he always felt like he was the guy at some point.
Exactly. Yeah.
But he seemed like he kind of matured and kind of rid himself of some of those knucklehead moments this year. This is the best I've ever seen him play in terms of temperament. He's really matured. And let's face it, none of us knew what that situation was going to be, like when they clean house. Like, we actually thought he was going to be the problem in the locker room, you know, going into this. Like, we all, like, I think even we talked about this in the preview. I'm pretty sure we thought, like, he might be the guy that might mess this up, because he's going to want to, you know, he's not going to want to play behind, like, guys like SGA, you know?
Yeah.
And he's accepted the role. The opposite happened, and he's been amazing this year. He's even clutched, too. I think the last 5 minutes of the game, he's actually over 51% from the field. So, like, this is a guy he's been all out amazing this year in terms of him coming off the bench.
He's flourished not having to start and not having to be the guy to lead the team, and to have a leader like Chris Paul to lead him. And like, he's like, in terms of fantasy wise, he's maybe even more productive this year than he has as a starter. Yeah. Possibly, right? I haven't looked. I don't know those stats, but I know fantasy wise, he's been a great pickup for a lot of fantasy owners out there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know what? He's up there too. Yep. Who else you got there?
So I got and feel free if I'm leaving somebody out of this as well. We got Montrezl Harrell, who's his stats is he's averaging essentially. I'm rounding up the stats. I don't have it exactly. I'm just trying to round it off here, but he's. He's averaging 19-7 on the season. He's shooting 58% from the field, and he's averaging about a block a game coming off the bench. And you know how it is with him. He's their most valuable big. Like, his impact and his energy actually changes games. Like, he jumpstarts their team. Like, the Clippers, because of the kind of, like, with Kawhi leading that, like, that leadership in the locker room and stuff, I know they got guys like Beverly and everything else, but you actually need his energy more than ever on this team.
I think so. And like, and as you said, they. I think he wasn't playing. I don't think he's played. I don't think he's played yet in the bubble.
He hasn't. No.
Yeah. And they're losing games, man.
Yeah.
They lost to Phoenix today. I really think if he was there, they may not have lost. Or even to the game with Lakers. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, you're right. He's definitely a player that they need coming off the bench, and you can see that they miss him right now.
Yeah, because from what I understand, is his grandmother died, and apparently he's taking it really hard. He's taking it really hard. Like, they don't even know when he's coming back.
Damn.
Yeah, he's taking it really hard. So, and I don't think the team is, like, kind of forcing him to come back or anything. They're just, like, a you know, like, kind of, like, take your time kind of thing. So, I don't know if she what she died from or what have you. I don't know if it's because of COVID or whatever. But yeah, but I think that's why he's been out of the bubble the entire. Like, I don't even think he's – actually, I think he was in the bubble for a bit and he had to leave.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense then. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
But that'd be hard to come back to, like, come back and play, like, mm-hmm. immediately if he's been that close with her too.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And then the my other, I guess my third candidate, his teammate Lou Will. So he averaged 19-6 with 3 boards a game. His efficiency was probably a little worse this year. I think he averaged 41 from the field, 36 from the line, 83 from the free throw line. So, sorry, 36 from the three and then 83 from the free throw line. Mm-hmm. He's also won this award 3 times in the last 5 years. And because of the whole Magic City lemon pepper situation, like, his name is going to forever ring bells just because of those. That's what happened there.
That was dumb, man. That was dumb.
Yeah, and then, you know what? I was trying to at least play the devil's advocate and try to defend him. And then, you know, a couple days after the podcast was released, a stripper named Aries came out and said that he tips well as socially distanced dance for him. So I'm like, okay then. All right, never mind.
Yeah. That was, you know, not only that, like, it's not only going there. It's just that the whole COVID thing too as well, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're putting at risk, like, the bubble itself.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can get infected. Did you see what happened with the Marlins? Not to change topic. Well, no, same topic. The Marlins, they had, like, mm-hmm. the whole team. There was an outbreak on the team.
17 players, right?
Yeah, because one player went to the bar.
Is that right? What happened?
I got to confirm that, but that's what I was told today. One player went to the bar while on the road, got infected, came back to the clubhouse, and everybody got sick. Boom. So, like, it's that easy, especially if you're in Atlanta, like in Georgia, sorry, or wherever the strip joint is, and or you're in those type of cities.
Were they all asymptomatic, or was it like some guys were sick?
The Marlin players?
Yeah.
Oh, some guys were sick, man, because we got to remember, too, like, coaching staff got it, too, right? So players were sick, coaching staff were sick, so they're showing symptoms, the coaches.
Yeah, the older guys. Yeah.
But as well as the players too, right? A lot of the players that have had it are sick, right? Like literally, like, symptoms and everything, right? Yeah. And some are not having symptoms, right? It's a weird virus, right? In terms of whatever. But that being said, that's what I said with Lou. Like, yeah, it was one thing to go to the strip joint COVID free and come back and, you know, and play a game, but not during these times. In Georgia, of all places, too, right? Is that where the strip joint is?
Yeah, I don't even know where it is. Yeah, because you went back.
Yeah, yeah, man. Georgia, man. These guys don't even believe in Matt, like, the governor of Georgia. Anyhow, we're getting off topic.
but I tried to defend you, Lou. I tried.
No, you can't.
If Aries didn't come out, man, because I was like, nah, he didn't take no dances. Then Aries blew my theory that straight to hell, man.
Nobody's going there for the food, like only for the food. unless he was on his way to wherever he was going.
Unless you know one of the wings or one of the specials actually named after you. You know, then that's a different story. Then I'm attending. If something's named after me in the restaurant and that's a frequent place that I go, I'll go for the food if it's named after me. But yeah. But like I said, either way, Aries blew my my devil's advocate argument to smithereens. So
and she should have kept her mouth shut too. That's another.
I mean, he tipped well. What else do you want?
What's that?
I said he tipped well. What else do you want?
Oh, yeah. So that gives her a right to go on social media and tell everybody. She's looking for hype, too, man. She's looking for that attention. Everybody's looking for attention these days, man.
But going back to the basketball aspect of it.
Yeah, six-man award.
But yeah, like I said, I think some of his effectiveness, I mean, don't get me wrong, he played today. Today was his first game back. And, you know, he showed himself as Lou Will. Like, I know he didn't play like he wasn't up to complete par, but... You know, he did Lou Will things as he's prone to do, but some of his effectiveness gets taken away just a little bit just because Kawhi and PG are there now. Whereas, like, you know, some games he's finishing the games, taking the big shots. You know, like this year, it's like it's harder to do that when you got two of the top five or the top 10 players in the NBA on your roster that's playing perimeter, finishing games. So it's a little harder for you to take that role on. And then, especially defensively, when those guys are being on there, it's kind of hard to justify him being out there at the end of games too defensively. But he's still completely lethal in his role.
Sure,
you know. So am I missing anybody from this category, or do you want to put anybody else on there?
I don't think. No. I think you pretty much got like the top five right there.
Okay,
that I can think of.
So who would be your sixth man of the year?
For me, it was either going to be Dennis Schroeder or Lou. Like, I was going to go down to those two. But, like, Lou has won it almost every year now for the last couple of years, though. Mm-hmm. It feels like, you know, but, yeah, you know what? That should not even matter how many times he's won it. And I think you got to give it to Lou right now in terms of what you just said in terms of the stats. But Schroeder, you know, if they had – actually, they had a great team, a great season, too, going into this year.
Yeah, they really did.
Yeah, you know what? I'm split between Lou and Dennis Schroeder. But if I had to choose, I'll go back with Lou again.
Okay.
I'll go back with Lou for what he's been able to do.
So your choice
is Lou. Year in and year out.
So your choice is Lou.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who do you have?
I'm going to go with Harrell.
Okay, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think with him, he's their most important big. Like, he has to finish games. Like I said, he provides the most impact on their squad. Teams have a harder time scoring on him in the paint. I think the status on NBA.com is teams average 51% against him when he's in the paint. So which is a great stat if in terms of defending. But it's just the energy that he carries on that team. Like again, like we all put that on Patrick Beverley, and they got guys that are dogs and stuff. And Patrick Beverley deserves some of that credit too. But he's like underratedly. He's their biggest energy guy. Like. He has to be there, and he has such an impact. And then offensively, you know, he passes a little bit. He can pass. He's got points. Like, he, the pick and roll, he's great at that. He rim runs really good. He scores baskets in the paint. Like, he's got some moves. Like, he's a talented player, man.
He's come a long way.
Definitely. I didn't think he was going to be like this coming out of Louisville. Like, he was kind of the same guy at Louisville, but you were just like, he's a little undersized. Like,
undersized, was his knock. That was his knock.
Yeah, and you're like, I've seen guys like him before, and you know, but it's like, nah, he's definitely proven me wrong coming out of college for sure. But you can go with him or Lou Will, but I think this year I would flip it to Montrez this year.
No argument for me there. Yeah,
I'd flip it to him.
Right. He was in the running for last year too, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, absolutely. Right? It was really between him and Lou Will last year too.
Basically, so he's been consistent now, and that's probably what owners or GMs are looking for.
What is his contract up?
I don't know. That's a good question. That's a good question. I don't know. But you know, at the same time, though, too, like, not to knock the six men award, but you're going up against backups, man. Like, I would love to see Harrell, like, on a starting lineup go up against Giannis or, it's a different game, man. It's a different game.
No, it's true. But the thing is that because he impacts games at the end, like, he is playing those starters, at least to finish games out.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think he's actually a free agent this year. He's unrestricted free agent. I think this season he's, he's unrestricted going into this. Well, I can't even say summer because we're at summer now. But when the season ends, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent.
He should get starters type money.
Yeah,
I think. But going back to like ending games against starters, he's still not starting games against starters. So
yeah,
you can get into foul trouble early, and it takes more on your toll when you're guarding against like a premier starting player. So, but no, just that being said. I'm not taking nothing away from him. I'm just saying it'll be interesting to see him as a starter.
Yeah.
And how he does.
No, for sure.
Look at Dennis Schroeder. Like, Schroeder, like, he looks great too this year. Like, as the points I mentioned, him not having to lead, and he has a leader in Chris Paul and no pressure. And he looks good. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's a starter in the NBA.
None.
Personally, I don't think he's a starter. I wouldn't feel confident starting having him as my starting point guard to win it all.
But coming off the bench, it's a great.
Oh, 100%. He's lethal.
He fits perfectly.
Oh yeah, he can beat backup point guards. And defensively, he's great. Steals, and he's smart. So he can pick on those backup point guards.
All right, so let's move on to the rookie of the year. Some of the nominees I have here is PJ Washington, Eric Paschal, Kobe White, who had some moments this year for sure. I dropped him from my fantasy team, Julian, about 2 weeks before he started balling out. A month, I dropped him, and then I swear, like the next maybe two games later, he just went on the tear and didn't stop basically until this pandemic hit.
I saw that tear. Yeah. He was hitting threes. He was hitting six, seven threes a game.
Oh man, he was him and Zach LaVine were keeping Chicago afloat a lot of games.
Yeah,
not even Markkanen and not even Wendell Carter. Like those two were the ones that were like keeping them afloat half the time. He was playing really well. RJ Barrett being another one on the Knicks. Tyler Hero, Rui Hachimura. Those are some of the rookies that are probably going to fill out the all rookie first and second team. But with that said, I got.
Hold on. You got no none?
I'm about to get into that right now.
Sorry. I thought you named them all.
It's okay. It's all right. Damn it. Don't cut me off. But so I got like four main nominees in this category. We'll start with Kendrick Nunn, actually, because as we look at his stats, he averaged about 15 points a game. And his story is amazing because his splits is 45 from the field, 37 from three, 84 from the line. He started every game. Like I said, again, his story is amazing. When you see the work that he had to go through playing he's playing in all these small schools, and I forgot his story was a tough story. Then he played on Golden State, I think, on their G League team.
Did he?
He played like last year was on their G League team, and I think and then this year he got his break with Miami, and I think he's had one of the best starts for rookies in NBA history. I think his first five games.
Really?
His first five games, I think he's one of the first players to have his first five games was averaging 20 points each to start his career. And really and truly, he plays like he belongs, man. He fits right into that Heat culture. Like, to me, he was more valuable than Hero, which is their first round pick.
Yeah. And Hero was balling well, too.
Yeah.
So that just shows you how well Kendrick Nunn played in his rookie year.
Like I think Hero's ceiling is higher, but for this season, I would definitely prefer Nunn for this year anyway. Maybe not for this restart because Hero looked like he improved a little bit too.
He looked nice in his restart. Oh.
Mm-hmm. The next one I got here is Brandon Clark from Gonzaga. He's from Vancouver, right? He's Canadian born.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He averaged 12-6. His splits was 62% from the field. I mean, he's a big, but he averaged 37 from three, and he had 78 from the line, which is actually pretty good. I didn't think it was actually that high, considering that he's like a big energy guy and he plays hard. He's kind of like a Montrezl Harrell light. He's very athletic.
Yeah. He plays like a journeyman. You know, like somebody who's been around the league, and he's a rookie. And that's what stood out for me. Like, he's scrappy. Like, he's, you know, he's in the paint where he should be. He impressed me.
Yeah,
but he wasn't like, was he a lottery pick too? Was he not?
He was a first rounder.
No, I know that, but like I'm saying, he didn't go as high. Maybe I think he was like 21st pick.
21st
yeah, that's one. What I meant. Like to be in the nomination of rookie of the year.
Yeah.
At that pick, you know, like we just talked about Kendrick Nunn not being, he was undrafted, obviously, right?
So, right.
But still, 21st pick and being, you know, in that talk, in that conversation for rookie of the year is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like he was all. I mean, he was one of the biggest bench players. He's probably going to get more time now, especially with Jared Jackson tearing his meniscus, and that's an unfortunate injury, man. Because he's a good player too, and they're really going to need him. He's been playing really well, so I don't know what happened the last game or what have you, but that's
I didn't see. Yeah.
I didn't see the injury either. But like I said, he's definitely going to get more minutes now these last five games. And then the other guy is his teammate Ja Morant. He's the reason why. Actually, you know what? Before I even get to him, let's talk about Zion because he's like the lightning rod in all of this. You know, I love Zion. That's my guy. But like, I try not to miss Pelican games. But you know, with all that said, there's no way that I can give him that award. Even if he played, honestly, even if he played every game of the same way, and he pushed the Pels to an 8 seed. And got them into the playoffs, I still wouldn't pick him for rookie of the year. I just think it's too little.
Hold on. What if he started the season and he played the same way?
Absolutely rookie of the year. Absolutely.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, it's strictly limited to the amount of games he played. Nothing to do with the impact. Like obviously, like he was pushing grown men around. Like he was damn near a star, like in the 19 games that he played. But it's kind of like, you know what it was like? Like when Embiid had his rookie year and he played like 30 games or 31 games.
Yeah.
He was amazing, but he played in too few games to give him that award. And I think Malcolm Brogdon was the one that won rookie of the year, and he didn't have a great, like he had a steady rookie year, but it wasn't like outstanding. But it's because nobody really stood out, and Embiid played too little games. Like the amount of games he played was too little.
Agreed.
And with Zion, it's because of Ja Morant, which, I mean, I guess I'm kind of like showing my hand who was the rookie of the year, but because of how Ja Morant played and how special he was in terms of leading the team to the position that they're in now, going after every star point guard, going after every star player on the other team, playing with his chip on his shoulder, like he's kind of like fallen to that, like Steve Francis, Derrick Rose, Russell Westbrook, that crazy athletic point guard mold that just plays hard and attacks the paint like a big man. He plays like that. The thing that scares me with Morant though is that he's so light. Like he's kind of like, he's almost like AI, even though he's like 6'2 or whatever his height is, 6'2, 6'3. He's like 175 pounds. I think they said since the pandemic stuff happened, he put on about 15 pounds, but he's still not a big guy. You know, so like long term, the way he's playing, that makes me a little nervous with him, actually, as opposed to Zion. I know people are nervous with Zion because of his explosion and his weight. He makes me nervous because he doesn't weigh enough. So that's where he scares me. But to me, the way he's played this whole year, I'm like, the amount of games that Zion's played, it doesn't overshadow what he did. Huge fan of Zion, but I'm like, it's too little games. He played 19 games. You know what I mean? I'm like, it's even like I said, even if this pandemic didn't hit, he would have, and he played every game, we would have played 37 games. It still wouldn't be enough.
No, I know. You have to play at least, I don't know, at least 50 games minimum.
Give me like 55 games minimum, 55.
When Ben Simmons won it, when he won it over, was it Mitchell and
Yes.
Utah?
Yes.
I think there was an argument between those two. Not an argument, but there was a debate like of how many games Ben Simmons played.
That's right. Right?
Wasn't that? Yeah. I'm just trying to think how many games that was. I can't remember. I wish I looked that up before But anyhow, you got to play at least a certain minimal game, minimum 50 games, at least 50 games. This is not even a topic of discussion, to be honest with you. The rookie of the year is hands down Ja Morant, unanimously.
Yeah.
Because of the limited games of Zion. Yeah, there's nobody else. Like, a better topic would have been, who's the second best rookie of the year? Who's the second best? Like, who would you want as a GM, as a rookie on your team if it wasn't Ja Morant? Because as rookie of the year, it's Ja Morant without a question.
Yeah. Like, honestly, I'm not even sure if I'd put Zion on the, has nothing to do with talent, but just based on the amount of games he ended up playing, I wouldn't even put him on the first team, like the all rookie first team.
Okay, it makes sense. If you're not going to give him rookie of the year,
Again, strictly based on the amount of games he's played, has nothing to do with anything else. It's just too little.
Games. Yeah, true. But do you think he'll be on a all rookie team? You think so?
I think he probably will. I think he probably will. But I don't know whether it's going to be first or second or what have you, but. But I think he probably will, actually, to be honest.
But it's crazy. It's weird, though, because if he didn't play enough games to be rookie of the year, he shouldn't be, you know? I don't know.
I don't dispute that. And I think the thing with
you shouldn't qualify for it.
I think the thing with Ben Simmons, it wasn't that he didn't play enough games, it's because he sat out his whole rookie year with the injury, and then
that was right. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely, my bad there. Yeah. That was a debate. So it technically was his second year.
Yeah, exactly. I got you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I think it should be like the number of games you played, not the seasons or
right. No,
for in my sure. eyes.
No, no. I remember in hockey.
In hockey, there was a huge debate when they let the Russians into the league.
And, oh, yeah, because they were playing professional for the last few years and then come again as a rookie. Yeah.
And the rookie comes in and wins Rookie of the Year at 32 years old.
Scores 50 goals.
I forgot who it was. Shiggy Markov. But anyhow, that's right. Sorry, my mistake. Yeah, Ben Simmons did not play his first year. That was right. Hey, no love for my boy TD? You didn't even put him in the...
Talk about about TD. Go ahead.
No, man. TD, man. You got to give some love to my guy, TD3, Terrence Davis. You know, playing on a championship team, he's not going to get that kind of time, minutes, and attention as other rookies playing on, you know, on subpar teams. And with the limited minutes he has been given, he produces... at a clip that, you know, that you can, that will give any viewer an understanding of how good he will be. I think he's going to be a starter for the Raptors, potentially in 2 years, depending on what happens with Fred VanVleet and Norm Powell. And I think him playing north of the border, too, he doesn't get that attention, too. So please give him some attention and some light. He could be not a nominee, obviously, but I wouldn't be surprised if he got like a couple of like third place votes or something like that.
Yeah,
too,
I think he has some consideration for the second team. I don't know if he's gonna get it, but he might get some consideration. With that said, listen, I've shown my love for TD. I think TD's a baller, man. Like. And I mean, his story is amazing too. Because was he even drafted? He wasn't drafted, right?
No. I think he was going to be second. Like he was. I think teams are targeting him to be a second round pick, and he told teams like, "If you're not going to draft me,
in the first
something round. Like that." I don't know the whole story. If you're not going to draft me the first round, don't bother drafting me or something like that. So he wasn't drafted, but he was wanted to be like as a UFA, whatnot. So.
Yeah, and I totally agree. Like he's to me, there's times he didn't even play like a rookie, like the confidence that he played with. I love like he's part of that reason why the Raptors have been playing so well too. Like I don't know how much minutes he's been getting, like how well he's been doing during this restart, because I haven't seen him have that much of the same kind of impact at least so far. But I mean, I think to me, I think with him, it's only a matter of time because he's that talented.
Oh, my boy TD has some growing to do, man. My man let me down, man. Like he didn't play last game, right? And I'm like, yo, what the hell? Like, what happened? This man came out of it like walking. he was wearing a mask with a hole cut out in the middle, It was just stupid. Like even I thought that. Like, what are you doing? And Coach Nurse, man, I respect Coach Nurse so much. The way he handled it in the media, he goes, yeah, we saw the hole in the mask. Yep, we're going to handle it. We are a veteran-led team. The vets are going to take care of it. I will take care of it, and it won't happen again. It's probably my man didn't play that same night. Yep. He didn't play the same night. Whereas most coaches would have probably, limited his minutes or played him a few minutes, but he didn't play him at all. And it was against Miami, too. I think it was a game where they could have needed him.
Yeah.
They could have needed him. Still sat him for the entire game.
And you know what? That as a young player, that has an impact on you when you get benched and your team still wins. That's an impact on you. Because at least if they lost or they got, whatever, you could be like, well, if I was in the game, we would have won that or what have you. But, you can't even say that, man. Yeah.
Any other team that would have probably could have happened and whatnot, but not on the Raptors, not on a championship veteran led team, Ibaka, Gasol, Lowry, vets. Yep. You can't come in acting like an idiot like that, man. And kudos to Nurse, only his second year, he's coaching like a vet, man. The way he has a tight ship and sets expectations and standards, and now the standard is set, man. Don't be a knucklehead. Just don't be stupid. Yeah. But there is some rumors TD is a conspiracy thinker, like the Michael Porter Jr.'s and that does have me a little bit worried, I won't lie.
Well, I mean, I'm not scared of the conspiracy theorist part of it, but at the same time, you understand what again, optics, right? Lou Williams going into the bubble. That's an optics situation. Yeah. You cutting a hole in your mask while wearing it in the bubble situation. Optics, right? It's just not a good look.
Yeah. It's not, yeah, exactly. But it also shows you the potential if this player can be a leader on a team. And it's not just the conspiracy thinking. It's that if you do knucklehead shit, chances are you're not going to be a good leader.
Right.
That's the bottom line. You might be a great player, but are you going to be able to lead your team and have the respect of your team?
And it's funny because as you say that, I don't know why this name popped in my head, but you could see what a player who reaches his potential off the floor on the floor, but does knuckleheaded things and kicks it away like a Gilbert Arenas.
Yeah, exactly.
Gilbert Arenas was amazing, but you saw how his career ended, and he's still kind of a knucklehead when you hear him talk behind like even now with his pods and different things. Great information. He's a great. He can break down a game in amazing ways, but. He's not somebody you want leading your franchise.
No, you are who you are, man. Yeah. I hate to say that. And that's just the personality you are born with or cultured or cultivated with. That's just pretty much it. But with rookies, I'm not going to label him like TD like that. Yeah, he's still young. And Michael Porter Jr., you worry about him too. But these guys are young. Right, so you just hope that after a few years and being around vets and learning the game and growing and maturing, they look back at certain things and grow from it.
Yeah. With that said, though, as we wrap up here, we're talking about TD. Let's focus on the Raptors a little bit. I know you're like the resident Raptor fan. Randall tried to claim that
last time,
so you guys can have it out. But with that said, you're the resident Raptor lifer here. And what are your thoughts on how they're playing so far?
Just to be clear, I'm the resident Raptor, whatever you want to call it. And then, Randall's still he's there though. I have to admit, he's a Raptor fan from day one, so I'm not going to.
But you're saying he's a distant second.
Oh my gosh, for sure. Because
be third. I'm just trying to start beef.
But as of right now, look, man, you know what, man? What are they, 3-0? No. Yeah, they lost that one preseason game. Did they lose any preseason?
Did they lose the Phoenix? I know they lost one.
I think the Phoenix, I think. It was Phoenix, yeah.
Okay.
Booker Duncan
Siakam said nasty in that game. That's the only thing I saw in that game.
It was Phoenix. So yeah, this tells you I'm the resident Raptor thing because I'm watching the preseason games, right? Mm-hmm. In the bubble. But anyhow, no. From what I'm seeing, man, they look like they didn't miss a beat. And a lot of the analysts are saying it's because they were together in Florida, in Orlando, a month before and all that, which partly could be true. But I just think that it's just what they've done last year and the veterans that they have and the coaching, what they have. And with even without Kawhi, they lost Kawhi, but they added OG, because you got to remember, OG never played in that playoffs, right?
Yeah,
and his dad, speaking of losing a close one, he lost his dad, and he was not the same player, right? We were talking about Montrezl Harrell earlier and his grandmother, but it affected him big time, right? So OG's almost looks like he's looking really good.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking really good defensively. I mean, his dribble drop, like he's looking really good. So you lose Kawhi, you know, that's a big loss, but then you get OG coming in, and you get like TD. Right, you never had TD last year, right?
Yeah.
So you're adding two players that are not going to be, you know, equal to Kawhi, but you're still adding something. And I think this team,
even Rondé, like Rondé's been playing.
Energy guy. Spreads to the other players off the bench. You know, when they see guys like Rondé and Kyle scrapping and whatnot, so. Yeah. The team is poised to come out the East, and that's not just saying it as a homer. I think they are set up beautifully right now to come out the East, just from looking at these three games, even from the whole season, leading like prior to COVID. So
yeah.
I think they come out. I think they have a stronger bench than any other team in the league. I said it. Strongest bench in the league, and I think that they come out the East. And the only real competition right now, there's real competition in Boston, but I really think Miami is the toughest team to come out. That's going to give Toronto the most trouble.
Skipping right over Milwaukee, I see.
Yeah, you know what? I like Milwaukee, but I just think that we have such a great game plan towards Milwaukee. I don't know. I just feel like with Gasol and Ibaka, our bigs and Nurse, I think our bigs are smart and defensively minded enough to partially shut them down. I just think we match up well with them too. Like, I don't know. If the Bucks beat Toronto, like, I wouldn't be shocked, right? Obviously, because they're a great team. But I think Toronto should beat them. Should. Even without Kawhi.
Going back to what you're saying earlier about what the analysts were saying, I find that amazing that they're talking about, because they're in Florida and they trained together for a few weeks before. I mean, mind you, it wasn't like they were training for like 2 months before everything happened. It was probably like pretty much the same time everybody else was doing it. But instead of doing it at their facility back in Toronto, they went to Orlando, got the approval, and did that. I mean, you're hearing rumors that, like, you know, even during this pandemic, the Lakers, specifically LeBron, never stopped training with his teammates. So, you know, like, where do we go from here with that? You know,
these American analysts never peg Toronto right. Like, they never assess them how they should be assessing. Going back to last year when Kawhi came on the team, going back to the playoffs, going back to the championship against Golden State, they never had it. They don't watch Raptor games, and they very rarely are right in terms of their assessment of Toronto. Very rarely.
Absolutely.
And they're wrong again. And they're wrong again.
Absolutely. Because
of that. They've been winning since the beginning of this season. So it's not like, what are these three games? Now, if they said that about Phoenix, like in these three games, Phoenix winning all these games and they came early, I would say, you know what, maybe that's possible because it's the same damn team that wasn't winning beforehand.
Right.
You know, right? But with Toronto, they've been winning before this.
Yeah, and it tells you a couple things. Number one, the lack of airtime that they get in the States.
Yeah.
So I think them being in this situation where pretty much all of the games are being aired,
you're going
to see them more. And now I think people are now starting to see, like, okay, yeah, this, I don't think this is a fluke, you know?
Yes. That Toronto Lakers game was had, like, one of the highest
ratings, yeah.
Ratings. Yeah.
On both sides of the border, yeah.
Yeah,
on both sides of the border, and Toronto won that pretty, like, I wouldn't say pretty handily, but they won that game.
In the last two, three minutes of the game, the bench takes over.
Yeah,
they can't match up with Caruso and Pope
Deion Waiters
and Waiters. with bench. Like, you know, you can't match it with our bench, man. It's not even close.
Well, especially defensively, right? Like, again, like the Raptors, you know, prior to COVID, they were the second best team in the league defensively in terms of defensive base. And I think they were like second in the team and second in the league in steals. Somebody like Van Vliet is like, he actually leads the league in deflections. And he had a big deflection against Miami, against Butler that last play of the game, which basically that was a game winning deflection.
Yeah. The team is set up beautifully to make a long run again, and this is why I'm glad the bubble is happening, because you know we have a great team and a great situation to go far.
Yeah,
and even without Kawhi, as I keep saying, I'm not taking nothing away from him, because without him we would never have won.
No, but, absolutely. I still think he should get a statue. That's just me, though. I still think he should get a statue for helping him to put Toronto on his back and bring the Raptors a title. But this is not to take away from anybody else what they contributed to that team last year and what they're contributing to now, because they like I said, I've enjoyed their season more this season than I had last year, to be honest with you.
Really? Okay.
No, just because I'm like, they play so hard every night. They play hard. They play smart. They're just on it. They're on everything all the time. And then I love the development of like Pascal, and you know these guys are getting their roles and they're embracing their roles. Like Siakam, they're getting their roles and just really embracing it. Norm Powell, especially, nobody really talks about him too tough.
Norm.
You know, he was at that Kobe camp this summer, and like you see the improvements and everything that he's done this year, like this offseason. Yep. It's really paid off. Like the Raptors, again, to lend to what you're saying before in terms of the lack of respect they get across the border, and it tells you, to me, this is nothing new, because I knew for a fact that these guys don't watch the Raptors the same way ever since when Vince Carter got traded to New Jersey, and they're like, oh, this is an amazing trade for New Jersey. You're gonna get like a legendary Vince Carter and stuff. But I'm like, okay, guys, like you guys weren't watching the last 6 years of what we've been here. Like people still think like, oh man, he put Toronto on his back and carried him. And it's like, yeah, but those last 3 years were shaky.
No, you know, beyond shaky.
Those last 3 years were shaky. And then even to fast forward that a little bit, when they traded when Masai got there and he got rid of Bargnani, and everybody was like, oh, well, that's gonna be a good pickup. I was like, yeah, right there you just told me you don't watch Raptor games. Because anybody who watched Raptors games, even like 2-3 games in a row, would tell you, we're like, remember, everybody was celebrating. People were celebrating.
Oh, my God.
People were celebrating when he got traded. And over across the border, like, oh, that's a good pickup for the Knicks. Oh, he's gonna do damage. You're like, yeah, you don't watch any Raptor games. You don't watch
any. I still don't know how much I pulled that one off. This guy's a con man or something.
He's a sweet talker. He was amazing at what he did. But that just, to me, those shows are some of the examples. How they don't watch these games.
They don't know. Yeah, and I don't know. You know, it's all about viewership and ratings for them. So the NBA and analysts don't get to watch it, right? They don't have to come up here and broadcast the games. They don't see the team, so.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all good. It's all good for us.
In the illustrious words of Doughboy, they either don't know, don't show, or don't care about the boys of the North.
that's perfect, actually. That's perfect.
And I guess we'll wrap it up there. So as usual, thank you, brother, for hopping on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Easy. I don't mind it.
Yeah, man. Thank you once again for sure. And like I said, these Raptor playoff games, they're going to be happening. We do our annual, I do the annual post game pause the last few years. We've had some very funny and entertaining episodes over the years from different guests such as yourself. Mm-hmm. For some of the reactions, especially last year, we did a lot of freaking out and celebration.
Yeah.
And I know we caught you at some of your lowest moments, because when Cleveland swept Toronto 2 years ago.
That one still hurts.
That was classic. But yeah, we're definitely going to be doing those again. So just, prepare yourself.
Yeah, for sure, man. You got to get me on for the playoffs, especially. So
yeah, prepare yourself.
No problem. Man. Easy stuff, man. I enjoy it. So easy.
Thank you for tuning in to the AV Podcast.
Special shout out goes out to Julian, aka Jules the Commish, for coming on the app to discuss the selections for the Sixth Man and Rookie of the Year awards, as well as some NBA bubble talk. Check out part 3 of the NBA awards next week, where I'll be breaking down the Defensive Player of the Year and the MVP, plus the All-NBA teams with some more guests, so make sure you check that one out. Which, as of right now, you can listen to on TuneIn and Alexa, as well as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, wherever else you listen to your podcast. Regardless of where you do listen to me, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe. And make sure you go to South Shore Ave to catch up on my entire catalog of podcast shows. Once again, that's SouthShoreAve.com. And keep in mind that the NBA playoffs start August the 17th, so of course we'll be doing the annual Raptors playoff post-game pods. After, I would say, every game or almost every game. I'm going to try to make it every single game this year instead of, like, most of the games. So make sure you look out for that as well. And still working on some stuff for the Stoop, so make sure you look out for that soon. That's all I'll say for now. I don't have a date for that just yet, but soon is what I will say. But we're working on some things right now, so make sure you look out for that as well. All right? For Julian, a.k.a. Jules the Commish, this is Cal C. And you've just tuned in to the AV Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Until the next time, folks, peace. We out.